Imagine an alternate universe where Nancy Drew and Wonder Woman are rivals thrown together to solve a case through Twitter. Welcome to the world of Pen Pals, you guys, a brand new scripted comedy that puts unlikely pairs in conversation with each other. This new five-part miniseries features Earwolf favorites like Paul Rust, Mary Holland, June Diane Raphael from How Did This Get Made, and Seth Morris, Bob Duca himself. To find out more about the show and hear the trailer, go to StitcherPremium.com/penpals. That's StitcherPremium.com/PENPALS. Hello, the internet, and welcome to another episode of the Cracked Podcast. My name's Jack O'Brien. I'm the editor-in-chief of Cracked, and this week we're talking about ways you're picturing the world wrong because of bad advertising, or good. Effective advertising. Movies that are nothing like the ads depicted, products that don't work the way you think they do, even some scandals that were totally manufactured. Ads lie, right? We know that routine household tasks aren't as frustrating and don't hurt your hands as much as they do in as seen on TV commercials, but we assume they have to have some basis in reality. I think I always assumed they followed the same logic as based on a true story movies. You know, they exaggerate some of the details while showing you the basic outline of things, and as we'll discuss today, that's not true. First of all, it's not even true of movies. Fargo opens by saying something awesome like, "This is a true story. Out of respect for the living, the names have been changed. Out of respect for the dead, everything else is told exactly as it happened." Which is just a badass way to open a movie that the Coen brothers decided to add to the beginning of their completely fictional screenplay because they knew they could. They knew the rules, and it turns out there's no law that says you can't just lie at the beginning of your movie. I kept being reminded of that feeling when I found out that Fargo was just completely made up, because so many of the ads and marketing and publicity is just as authentic as the opening to Fargo. The difference is with advertisers, it's not technically legal. If it was legal, I guess every ad would just be like, "Our genes make you literally fireproof. Walk through a flaming building like a god. Step into the gap." So you can't do that, but the only way we really have for punishing them are these class action lawsuits, which I don't know where they write about these things, but doing research for this podcast was the first time I'd heard that Duracell had to pay its customers for just straight up lying to them in ads for some reason, because it's not fashionable in our corporate-friendly modern culture, I guess. We just don't shame these companies for lying to consumers' faces and essentially defrauding them. So we'll cover a bunch of examples where they just straight up lied and said, "This battery lasts 5 times longer than normal batteries." And it turns out the batteries are just baby carrots. There are also tons of ways they lie to you without technically lying to you that we don't really dig into. Like in a recent episode about our outrage ecosystem, we talked about corporations creating products to outrage both sides of an issue and kind of use that outrage as fuel to fuel your purchasing habits and play people off each other. Like Axe body spray ads feature swimsuit models chasing men around, trying to sexually assault them. And I'd always assumed, wow, that body spray must be for people whose IQ scores are just tits, because that's what they wrote on the IQ test. But following the outrage episode and the research for the conversation you're about to hear, I now understand that those ads are actually calculated to appeal to conservative people who are just as smart as me, but who just love how angry and smug that ad makes me. And then Dove's Real Women campaign claims to be taking brave risks by showing normal-shaped women to misogynistic bros who've never jerked off to a human who wasn't photoshopped. They would seem to be warring factions in the culture war, directly opposed to each other. But the truth is, they're both made by the same company, probably from the same basic ingredients and in the same factory. Same deal with your sunglasses. They're almost definitely made by a company called Luxottica, which, if you're a stripper looking for a stripper name, you're welcome. Doesn't matter if you wear Ray-Bans, Oakleys, Revo. Those are the sunglass companies I know. All the designer brands, too. They're all made by this one company out of the same cheap material and sold at an arbitrary markup. And if they want to make them seem extra classy, they'll add extra plastic and metal to make them heavier. We're more willing to pay a lot of money for shit if it's heavy, is a piece of marketing research that they know that you don't know they know. When a pair of Beats headphones were taken apart a couple years ago, an engineer found that a full third of their weight was just metal parts that were added, quote, for the sole purpose of adding weight. Speaking of shit you don't need, you know that head-on product that just repeated head-on applied directly to the forehead 6 times in the ad? It turns out they were trying to bypass the thinky part of your brain for a good reason. That product was just a stick of wax with additional ingredients that made up one part per trillion, meaning it's just a stick of wax. It's the exact chemical equivalent of rubbing a candle on your forehead. Although I wouldn't be too quick to laugh at the buyers of Head On if you've ever drank Gatorade. Gatorade ads show people in like high-tech gyms being studied by guys in lab coats, and they use space-age words like electrolytes, but Gatorade is just salt water and Kool-Aid mixed together. That's it. Anyways, these are some of the more obvious ones just to get you warmed up. Let's get right into the conversation. I'll be back at the end for some footnotes. Talk to you then. All right, we're joined in studio by Carmen Angelica. Hello, Carmen.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good.
And we're always joined in studio by engineer Brett, but today he's turning the mic on and joining
Thank you.
Us.
Yeah, there's a big lock above my slider where my microphone is, and you unlocked it today. And
yeah.
I get to
while
roam
making
free around
fierce
the cage.
Eye contact with him the whole time.
Yeah.
And we're joined for the first time by J.M. McNabb, who is a longtime Cracked contributor. How are you, J.M.?
Hey, how's it going? Oh, I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Good, man. The reason you're joining us, other than that you are a wonderful part of one of our most prolific editorial teams, is that you recently wrote a pretty funny article that we wanted to talk about as sort of a jumping off point for today's subject, which the subject, I guess,
yeah,
I should say,
yeah,
up top is ways that we have the world wrong based on marketing, ways marketing lied to us that I think most people bought in one way or another. And your article was about specifically some recent movies that had somewhat misleading trailers.
It was specifically about movies that were sort of crazier than had been advertised. And a couple of them were, you know, twists that were sort of being preserved by the advertising. But a couple of them were just very clearly the marketing team was trying to, in a way, kind of fix their shitty movie and completely kind of rewrite what the story was. And it's I think probably the most famous one now is Passengers, which I wrote about for this, which had kind of a creepy premise that the trailer guy decided he would kind of rework for his own personal narrative.
It's just one guy. He does all the trailers. Yeah.
It's just one guy. Yeah. He's gonna kill himself soon. But yeah, I think it's probably, in terms of like the marketing, it's probably the kind of thing that happens all of the time. Just in terms of these examples, the movies, what they were kind of massaging happened to be so creepy and weird that people kind of took note of it immediately, even though I feel like these tricks are kind of done all the time. Like, yeah, with Passengers, they kind of streamlined the story to tell it in the 2-minute trailer. But in doing so, they had to kind of lop off this very disturbing arm of the narrative that finds Chris Pratt doing some kind of an unconscionable things to Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah. So, I mean, based on just going in to that movie, I've never seen it. So just in general, my impressions of that movie going into your article were, Carmen, what did you think Passengers was?
Well, when I watched the trailer, it was definitely like a space romance.
Right.
And then you find out the truth, which is like it is like a very creepy, control-y Stockholm-y type deal.
Like self-consciously so too, I feel like, with the Shining reference. Like
yeah.
Robot Shining. Yeah.
Robot, it's a robot Michael Sheen who's like a perfectly replicated human on top, but then has no legs, because I guess in the future they can make robots who look like humans, but they can't figure out like the legs or the hands.
Right.
Or they just got really tired. They're like, oh, we can't do the whole thing.
Hell, I'd be on a track. If you could just put me like on a track from the waist down, I'd be all good by me.
That's what they should have revealed, that in the future, just most people have their legs removed in like a bar stool. Inserted.
You know how they, yeah, you see every once in a while there's that company called Boston Dynamics, which makes robots with legs, and they put up all these YouTube videos every time they do a new robot, and it's just a guy pushing over a robot and the robot like self-correcting and standing up. So maybe in the future people just try to push over robots all the time.
Well, right.
And they were like, you know what? Let's just put them all on a track. This is too much, much robot pushing.
Everybody keeps pushing it. That makes me so sad when they push the robots. I'm like, let it walk.
Well, yeah, because sure. Most of them cannot deal with it. Most of them just like fall over backwards and like keep trying to walk.
Yeah. But
there's like a military robot that they invented that specifically so that it can transport stuff. Like the first iteration was called Big Dog, and it's a transport vehicle that can like walk over really rough terrain, and its whole thing is that like you can't knock it over, but when they're demonstrating that, it just looks like they're beating the shit out of a robot, because like there's people just like jump kicking it and it just like walks backwards and then like moves slowly forward.
Is that the one that looks kind of like a dog too?
Yeah,
which is even sadder.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm fine
it's
with
like
the human being pushed over, but a dog, that's too much.
But
so they only give robotics to the angriest scientists.
Right. Yeah, which is, that seems like a safe bet for humanity in general.
Anyways, back to Passengers.
Yeah, but back to Passengers. I mean, going in, I thought it was a fairly straightforward execution of what seems like a decent premise. Like, what if you were the last person on Earth? Or what if you were the last two people on Earth? That's like a hypothetical that women say to me all the time. Not even if you were the last person on Earth. No, but, you know, it's a thought that people have had. And I mean, there's that show Last Man on Earth, I think it's called.
Yes.
Yeah. So it just seemed like, yeah, this is a space station where these two happen to find themselves as the last people on Earth. Now, how do you get there? How do you get to having these two people be the last two people on Earth? That's the question that should have just been like, oh, we'll just kind of yada yada it. Maybe they both wake up. But how do they get there in the story, JM?
Well, in the movie itself, what happens is it just opens with Chris Pratt. He wakes up from cryosleep. He's in this giant luxury spaceship that's sort of going towards a new Earth where humanity has set up a new colony. But, it takes hundreds of years, so they have to put them in cryosleep. And he prematurely wakes up due to some kind of faulty mechanism. And he can't go back in. There's no way of getting back in because the ship has like 8 tennis courts, but there's no way for him to go back into cryosleep once he's been woken up. So he's super lonely. He only has half a robot to talk to. And he kind of wrestles with this dilemma of should he wake up one of the other passengers and ruin their life as well? Because the thing is, he's not going to live long enough to reach this destination. So he, after sort of like trolling through the videos of the passengers, because they make sort of, they do interviews with the people that are sending them to this colony. And he kind of falls for Jennifer Lawrence's character, just, through her creepy, the way
from
he's
afar,
creeping on their
through
videos.
Media without her ever meeting him. You know, the way a super normal romance works.
Classic.
Yeah.
Right.
the way all normal people use social media. But so he has this dilemma, should he wake her up? And it really, the movie kind of pays lip service to the idea that he's troubled by doing this and has him, a scene or two of him thinking, oh, maybe this isn't a good idea. But then he just does it because he's lonely and selfish and he's kind of a piece of shit. But he wakes her up and lies to her and just kind of pretends he's been woken up at the same time, and they're kind of discovering this together. She eventually finds out, this is kind of spoiling the movie, but the movie's terrible. No one should ever see it.
Right.
She eventually finds out, you know, there's kind of that third act, you know, like a rom-com where someone does something shitty and, you know, and the woman's mad at him.
But in a rom-com, it's usually a misunderstanding of sorts, or like the person gets caught in like the worst possible context of the kind of shitty thing they did before. But this is like, hey, I basically murdered you. I ruined your life completely because I was lonely and horny. Like, there's no
totally, yeah,
no positive spin that could possibly go on that.
It's not like he found out that she was like writing an article about how to break up with him or something.
Yeah. Yeah, nothing drastic like that.
But one thing I thought was interesting about the trailer, the way the trailer presents it, is the trailer basically just shows that scene of where he's pretending that he's waking up for the first time too, and she's waking up as if they're in this together. And it also starts with her voiceover kind of describing the situation, which actually watching the trailer again after seeing the movie made me think that this movie actually could have been a pretty interesting thriller if they had had it be from her perspective. Because if you started with her and she wakes up and there's charming Chris Pratt, but then, you know, halfway through the movie, she finds out that he's kind of conning her. That could have been a really interesting movie. But again, that one trailer guy who edits all the trailers, I think he was onto something.
Right. The one guy in Hollywood with like really good taste in movies is like, they're like, eh, you edit the trailers.
But I think his name was Joe Trailer.
Yes.
Joe Trailer. Yep. This movie was like, Pratt was the protagonist. Like, he was like, no matter what, he was the good guy. Even if he's being a dick, he's the good guy. Like, that's how the film was like, that's how this movie is. Or I haven't seen it. It just sounds real creepy.
I did read an interview with the writer, and he was saying, you know, it's about redeeming him because he's a likable guy. But I don't know. He was not a character that I felt like I wanted to redeem after that. Like, for me, I was kind of just off Chris Pratt, as charming and handsome as he is. I wasn't on board with any of the decisions he made. And then at the end, again, this is spoiling it, at the end, Jennifer Lawrence is given the possibility to go back into cryosleep. They kind of figure out a way to do that. And she opts not to because she realizes she is in love with Chris Pratt.
So the lesson is, reach out to the people you're creeping on online because they will fall in love with you.
Right. If you somehow force it so that it's only you and them for a long, prolonged period of time.
Gives me hope.
This is like Beauty and the Beast.
Right. Yeah, it is like Beauty and the Beast. Yeah.
It's like, just put her in my dungeon and then make my utensil sing to her and she'll love me.
Right. Where he's clearly just drugged her. I think that's clear to everyone.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was the review in IndieWire suggested that there could have been an ending where, because Chris Pratt almost dies at the end, and that's when she kind of realizes she loves him. But the critic suggested that a more interesting ending would have been if Chris Pratt had died and Jennifer Lawrence is left alone, and then she has to decide whether or not she's going to pull a Chris Pratt and wake someone up for company. And that would be kind of a Twilight Zone-y, yeah.
Yeah. There are like 9 different places where they could have gone left or right, where left would have been a far better movie, and instead they went right.
Would that mean nobody would get to the second Earth, though? Like, because people would accidentally keep dying and keep waking somebody up.
Yeah, that would be a good Twilight Zone. They flash forward to like the ship arriving, and there's just like one old guy who's like, whoa!
I made it!
What are some other weird movies that you talked about in your article?
Well, the other big one that was really, really changed in the trailer was Collateral Beauty. Did any of you guys see that? Why would you?
No, with a title like that.
Yeah, it's not a sequel to Collateral. That's misleading.
Or American Beauty.
Right.
It's not a movie where Jamie Foxx from Collateral meets Kevin Spacey from American Beauty and they rob banks together or something. It's Will Smith. And the trailer just makes it seem like he's writing these letters to abstract concepts like love and death, and then actually gets visited by those sort of magical demigods played by British people. And they like teach him how to get over his daughter's death. And it's kind of a Christmas movie. And the real movie is horrifying. it's not even a twist. Like, the basic premise of the movie that they totally gloss over in the trailer is that Will Smith's business partners at an ad agency are sick of him complaining about his dead daughter. It's ruining their ad agency.
We've all been there.
Yeah.
Someone's got a case of the Mondays.
That was Garfield's problem. His daughter died.
Yeah, they just didn't show that.
Yeah, they never showed that in the strip.
Her name was Lasagna.
Oh, that's so sad.
So his friends decide to hire actors to portray these abstract concepts he's been writing to then show up and talk to them. And then it gets even stupider because their big plan to sort of oust him from the company is they hire a PI to videotape him talking to these people, and then they're going to digitally erase the actors. So it looks like he's just talking to nobody, and they're going to play it at a board meeting and get him thrown out of the company.
What?
This is psychotic. These people, also that they all agreed that they were like, this makes sense. We get some actors. Right. We're going to be loving. Like, they're like, clearly somebody was like, okay, I wrote in my journal this morning. Right. I've been doing my journal writings and this idea just popped out of my head.
Is there a board member that's like, hey, maybe we just give him like 6 months off? Sounds like a fair thing to do.
Wait, is this all to save him or because they legit want him fired, or they're trying to like help him?
It's played as kind of both. It's played as like they're concerned for him because he's their friend, but they also don't want him at work anymore. So they kind of try to have it both ways, in my opinion.
But they want him to look crazy.
Yeah, they want him to look crazy to the board for sure. It's not a well thought out plan in any respect. No. I thought one of the saddest things about it to me was the idea that it's just an accepted thing that working actors will just have to take like even like a con job because right. It's better than waiting tables.
So you're going to con the sad widower into thinking that he's lost his fucking mind. And then we're going to need you to drop off the face of the earth for a little while after that.
The money. Yeah, that's right. I didn't think of that because they wouldn't be able to run into him
right.
after
yeah.
that.
Then,
and
then
like
we
Arby's.
Need to put you in the witness protection program for at least a half a year.
Also, they need someone who's very specifically good at improv.
Right.
Like, they have to like really tap the improv scene to be like, but we need you to be super real and like the embodiment of love.
Right.
I think 90% of people in improv get recruited into harebrained schemes. No?
Yeah.
Is that wrong?
Yeah.
But then, okay, none of that matters, actually, because in the end, the big twist is they were magical people.
What?
That were also responding to casting calls, apparently.
The actors weren't actors?
No. So, like, again, the trailer guy was right, but he kind of spoiled the twist in a way. I don't know.
So the magical people were fooling his coworkers?
Yeah. They said they were actors, but they were really magical. And also, like, Will Smith basically guessed how the universe works. Like, he kind of just picked these concepts to write to as if they were people, and it turned out they were people.
I feel like all of these things are secretly, like, teaching tools in his weird school that he teaches his kids at and, like, two other kids. Just like, this is how the world actually works. If you,
I think this movie is one of the tenets of Scientology,
right.
Or something.
They're like weird little specific offshoot of it.
There's more. Do you guys want to hear the other crazy twists?
Wait, what? That's not
there's
the
another
last crazy
twist in this movie.
Yeah, yeah. Because they also in the trailer they show this kind of support group that he's going to, and he has a budding romance with one of the women in the support group who also lost a child. They like go on a date, like a first date. And then at the end, it turns out that was Will Smith's estranged wife who he is forgotten, I guess, because of sadness. And she said that he wanted her to treat him as a stranger if they ever saw each other again. It's crazy.
What the fuck?
So the manipulation by Joe Traylor here is to make this seem like this is not the craziest fucking movie ever conceived by a film student. Is that right?
Yeah, Joe Traylor really, if anyone saw this movie, it was because of Joe Traylor. Like, if you knew what this movie was going into it, I can't imagine you would ever think that this was a sane decision to make.
It honestly sounds like a a dream that you're having where like it kind of goes on a long time and you're like, wait, when you think back on it, none of it really makes sense.
Yeah, I was a little worried when I brought it up that you were going to be like, that wasn't a movie that came out this year. Like, I don't know what you're talking about.
We're all figments of your imagination, Jam. I represent, I don't know, masculinity.
Where have you been?
Laugh at that, Carmen?
Yeah, totally.
I was shocked by the Trolls one. That was the one that was most surprising to me, other than Passengers, which was just like a really long, creepy stalker metaphor.
Yeah, Trolls was weird. Believe it or not, I watched that just for the article. I hadn't seen that one already. Because it's got this kind of really weird, elaborate story where the trolls were enslaved by these monsters who could only feel happiness when they ate a troll. So the trolls escaped this magic tree they lived in that was actually like more like a concentration camp, because it was a prison that was inside of this monster village. This is all just the prologue, by the way. So they finally escape, but then later some monsters kidnap some of the trolls, so the trolls have to go back and save them from being eaten. It's really crazy. It's really dark. It's allegorically strange because the trolls are kind of antidepressants in this scenario. I don't know why it's any of these things. When I was watching it, the only thing I could imagine was that it was probably, you know, they were basing it on the toys, obviously. And I just imagine like Charlie Kaufman, an adaptation, like a screenwriter who's been assigned these toys to adapt into a movie and just like sweating in a bed trying to figure out what the story is.
Yeah. Right. Just like wants to get back at the universe for giving him this assignment. But yeah, right, so it's like they are the victims of a genocide, essentially. And then they have to save the monsters or something.
Yeah, and this may also be about Scientology, actually, because then the trolls convince the monsters that they don't need to eat the trolls to feel happiness. And then they all sing a Justin Timberlake song and dance throughout the town where their ancestors died horrifically.
Oh.
Oh, wow.
Oh, God.
Just make the movie about fine. Like, one of the guys has they all have jewels in their tummy. One of them doesn't. One of them does it, and then he needs to find the jewel for his tummy.
Right.
That's it. You don't need to have people eating each other. This is for children.
Yeah, feels like maybe PETA got a hold of it and was like, make a metaphor about meat eating and like how it might make you feel good for now or something like that.
But it really won't make you happy.
Yeah. It really feels like it has an axe to grind. It's just like not very clear about which axe it is.
Yeah. And there are some literal axes in the movie too, I think. It was a confusing movie. Like, I feel bad for any parents that had to go see that, because I just can't imagine the conversation you would have with your kid on the way home from the theater.
Right.
The other one in the article that was kind of like that was the Alice in Wonderland sequel, which was, again, I feel like the screenwriter's brain just kind of ate itself trying to come up with a story for this children's movie, where it involves time travel and mental institutions. And I think I saw the trailer for this one in the theater, and I don't think any of that was really advertised.
Yeah, no, they did not show mental institutions. Yeah, it almost seemed like it was like a Wizard of Oz type structure where it ends with her waking up in a mental institution, but then she kills a psychiatric doctor and it goes back to Wonderland. But that could very easily it's like left very ambiguous whether Alice is like a crazy person who is like murdering people, which is a weird possibility to leave open for a children's movie.
Also, didn't they establish that she was like just walking around mumbling to herself or something? And that's how she ended up in the institution. So she doesn't disappear when she goes to the land.
Yeah.
She doesn't go away.
Wonderland.
Yeah. I almost went Neverland. No, that's not right.
Yeah. So she, the whole time that she thinks she's in Wonderland, she's just wandering around, and they like show it, right? They show her wandering around her living room, bumping into furniture and like talking to...
No, they don't show that part, but her mom says that's what happened.
Oh, that's like, what
her
happened.
Mom said, yeah, no, you didn't go anywhere. You were just, yeah, bumping into walls and the couch. So we brought you to a mental institution. And then she stabs the doctor and runs away and goes back to Wonderland. But, you know, presumably she's just in the parking lot of the mental institution.
Just disappearing into her own insane mind once again.
Yeah.
Today's episode of the Crack Podcast is sponsored by Blue Apron.
Blue Apron. Listen, not all ingredients are created equal. Fresh, high-quality ingredients make a real difference. So it's important to know where your food comes from. And just a refresher to all the college students out there, if it's coming from a box with the word Mac on it, it's probably not fresh, and you probably don't know where it's coming from. Thankfully, for less than $10 a meal, which is less than you ever spend on delivery or takeout, Blue Apron delivers delicious, quality food courtesy of over 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranches across the U.S. Some of the meals they've prepared for this month include, get your salivary glands ready, spinach and fresh mozzarella pizza. And that comes with a side of olives, bell peppers, and ricotta salata. I believe that's a salad. They've also got Parmesan-crusted chicken with creamy fettuccine and roasted broccoli. Both of those sound delicious, and based on some similar meals I've made in the past from Blue Apron, they are delicious. You can check out this week's menu and get your first three meals for free, you guys, with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/crack. You'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. Again, that's blueapron.com/cracked. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. All right, I'm going to give you a hypothetical. So you've got some buddies coming over for the Final Four this weekend, and you're pumped because it's looking like it's going to be a good one. Also, your bracket is looking good. I mean, whose bracket isn't looking good? Am I right? No, everybody, I'm still in fifth out of 20 people in my bracket, and I like have one team left alive. But let's say that your bracket is destroying your friends and coworkers, and you're the envy of the office. Well, you know what wouldn't be good? If you have all your friends come over for the big game this weekend and you have nothing to give them. They're thirsty, you guys. Do yourselves a favor, get ready for tip-off by picking up a six-pack of this beverage you might have heard of called Coca-Cola and an 8-pack of Powerade. And while you're at it, you can get all sorts of stats and pointers about the games at coke.com/alwaysready. So enjoy the last of the big dance this weekend, drop some knowledge on your friends, and gear up to watch the games with Coca-Cola and Powerade from Walmart, and get in on the NCAA March Madness action by visiting coke.com/alwaysready. That's coke.com/alwaysready. NCAA and March Madness are trademarks of the National Collegiate Athletic Association, the NCAA, but you knew that already. So I wanted to put some of these in context of some all-time greats in the realm of bullshit trailers, and then we can move on to some non-movie ones. And two that I've always been amazed by are the movies Kangaroo Jack and Snow Dogs. Do you guys remember these movies?
Yeah, the movies with the talking dogs and the talking rapping kangaroo.
Rapping kangaroo. Yeah,
I haven't seen them, but I've seen the trailer.
Right.
So
if you saw the trailer, that's what you assume, because in the trailer, Cuba Gooding Jr. looks over, a dog starts talking at him, and he's like, wait, what? And then in Kangaroo Jack, it's like just a basically a rap video with a rapping kangaroo. And both of those are dream sequences that happen in the movie. So Snow Dogs is just a story about Cuba Gooding Jr. finding out that he's been adopted and going to like investigate the will of his biological mother after she died. It's like this supposedly like emotional journey into his past in Alaska, and like he meets his biological father, and it's just supposed to be a tearjerker. Like, people who showed up looking for a talking animal movie were pissed, but not as pissed as the people who showed up to Kangaroo Jack expecting a talking animal movie, because that was a R-rated buddy comedy until they screened it for people, and people were like, wow, this is fucking terrible. And so Jerry Bruckheimer, the guy who produced it and produced a lot of bad movies that went on to make a lot of money, was like, here's what we do. We add a dream sequence where there's a rapping kangaroo, because the premise was always that to low-level criminals go to Australia and have a bag full of money stolen from them by a kangaroo. So he was like, let's add a rapping kangaroo, put that in the trailer, talking animals, do great box office. They did that. It was number one at the box office the week that it came out. And amazingly, they spent $60 million on Kangaroo Jack somehow.
Oh my
and it ended up making its money back and made $88 million. But it's like full of boner jokes and like guys like talking about boobs and like being horny and stuff. And it's like, it's an adult comedy. It's like 48 hours written by extremely dumb people. And that's what people showed up to with their kids looking for a fun Dr. Doolittle sequel.
That's crazy. I mean, I just feel bad for all the balls.
Parents. Just the balls. I'm Jerry Brown.
I watched some of Kangaroo Jack knowing that we might talk about it. And I'd forgotten that the reason why they put sunglasses and a sweatshirt on the kangaroo to make him more human-like is because they think they've killed him with their car.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the first thing we see is that they hit the kangaroo with their car and then they're like, oh, that kangaroo's dead. And it seems like it should be. And presumably the theater is full of like crying children at that point. And then they're like, we better put some sunglasses on it and Weekend at Bernie's it for some reason.
Yeah. Yeah. It'd be like if Weekend at Bernie's advertised itself as a movie about this fun executive named Bernie.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Bernie likes to party. Kids, come watch.
I feel like I had a similar experience with Marley and Me.
Oh, really?
The dog, because I didn't know it was going to be so freaking sad. It was like this cute little, like, look at this, naughty puppy. And then it just gets so sad.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really, really, really sad.
If you take your kids to it, it, like, disturbs your child. It's, like, not a good...
It's, like, has the structure of, like, a joke, except the punchline is, ah, all dogs die. You didn't know that? Come on.
I feel like Robin Williams has a lot of these movies.
His whole career is...
There are three that come out to me
this.
That there's two movies that are ostensibly for children, Bicentennial Man and Jack,
right.
Which Bicentennial Man is about...
Robot Robin Williams.
He's a fun robot. He's your robot butler. And he's got Robin Williams' voice. That's amazing. But in the movie, it's his quest to become a human.
Yeah, it's AI.
And he slowly changes out his robot heart with a human heart and gets blood and gets
like literally.
Yeah, he slowly replaces his organs and all he wants to do is be deemed as a human being by the government and get a social security card and all the great human stuff we have to deal with.
Right.
And the end of the movie is him dying and whoever is in charge of deciding what counts as human or not, I don't know, Donald Sutherland or something. It's like, oh, and he died, the oldest human to ever live. But he was kind of a robot for about 150 of those years.
Right.
And it's really sad just watching this old person die. Similarly, Jack.
It's just old Robin Williams, right?
Yeah.
At that point.
Yeah. And similarly, Jack, not you, but the movie Jack is about a kid who ages four times faster than other kids. So all the kids in the movie are 10, but he appears as if he's a 40-year-old man.
So, first of all, they pitch Jack as a body-switching movie. Like,
oh, really?
First and foremost. Like, not really, but all it was Robin Williams behaving like a child. Uh-huh. The same way that Big was Tom Hanks behaving like a child. It was like, look at this big guy. He's running around at recess. That's wacky.
Big with Robin Williams.
It's Big with Robin Williams, essentially.
And the end of the movie is his high school graduation, and now he's 80 or something like that, and him giving this, he's the valedictorian or
best
something like that
ever,
and he gives this speech about how he has so much life to live ahead of him, and now that he's, you know, graduated high school, he's really gonna live a full life, but it's heavily implied that he's going to die very, very soon.
Don't miss the opening line of that speech, which goes, I'm gonna keep this speech short, like my life. And everyone's like, ha, 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 ha. Oh, Jack, you're the best.
Yeah, I was pretty horrified by that as a child.
That's fucking amazing.
There's one more Robin Williams movie that it goes out of its way in the trailer to make it seem like it's a different movie, and it's called World's Greatest Dad. And this is an R-rated indie comedy that not a lot of people saw, but the movie makes it seem like it's kind of like a road trip comedy with a guy and his son, and he's an aspiring writer and his never gets his career
struck
off.
Me as like a combination of Wild Hogs and Little Miss Sunshine, like somewhere between those two.
Yeah, but it's a little it might be a little dirty. It advertises itself as R, but it doesn't seem too crazy. Now, in the first act of this film about the world's greatest dad, his son dies from autoerotic asphyxiation.
Oh my god.
Oh no.
You find his son with a noose around his neck and his pants around his ankles. Oh, okay. So the next thing that happens is Robin Williams writes a suicide letter from his son because he doesn't want his son's memory to be embarrassed that he was doing autoerotic asphyxiation. He wants it to seem like a regular suicide. So he writes a suicide note for his son, and everyone thinks his son's suicide letter is so beautifully written that they go, oh, I wonder if this kid wrote any other journals or stuff. Oh, so the rest of the movie is Robin Williams playing his personal writing off as his son's writing and getting his books published, all the stuff that he'd never been able to do during his life, all under his dead son's
name. So dark.
And it's really, really dark and not the movie that's advertised.
And the poster for the movie, too, also has, like, the big block cartoony letters on it. And it's just a picture of Robin Williams. So I could 100% see families just renting. And I think it's supposed to be ironic. But, yeah, I'm sure it traumatized a lot of weekend getaways with the kids.
It's playing on the coffee mug, World's Greatest Dad. And, in fact, in the poster, it's him drinking out of a coffee cup with World's Greatest Dad written on it. It's like, what if we adapted that coffee cup into a movie like that? That's what you think is coming.
It's like Trolls,
right? Exactly. It's like
a Trolls idea. Level. A minor dies from autoerotic asphyxiation.
Kevin, what's the
Souls?
Wait, I heard him. We'll make it.
Any other movies you guys wanted to talk about?
Did you guys ever see Click, the Adam Sandler movie? Yeah.
What if your life was controlled by a universal remote?
Yeah.
Something
well,
like
that was I get not that I had high expectations for an Adam Sandler movie, but it was like a dumb movie I rented to, you know, just kind of mindlessly watch. And the second half of that movie, he like accidentally fast forwards into the future, and it's like his kids hate him and his wife has left him. And it's this really kind of sad hour of the movie where that culminates in him having a heart attack and dying. It's really weird and awful. And I went back and watched the trailer to see if that was in the trailer, and I just forgotten. And there's like a 4-second shot of Adam Sandler with like the old age makeup, but then it just cuts back to him like making a buxom jogger, you know, go by in slow motion.
That's the like, only really thing linger I remember.
Yeah, they don't linger on the existential horror of the later part of the movie.
Yeah, he has a universal remote that controls reality. We see in the trailer he like uses it to make someone's boobs bounce in slow motion. And then in the movie, he starts fast-forwarding past boring parts of his life and gets stuck in fast-forward mode. And like it's like, you should really savor your life, 12-year-olds who are presumably watching this Adam Sandler comedy. Like, what the fuck are you trying to do?
Like, who is this message for?
Right, who are you aiming this at?
Yeah, it's a lot of like him like muting his wife and stuff because, it's a movie predicated on the idea that being married to Kate Beckinsale would just be a horrible thing for a middle-aged.
Yeah.
But you have to go
for
to
a middle-aged Adam Sandler who wears like hockey jerseys to work every day.
But you have to go watch all those Underworld movies and be like, yeah, it was great, hon. Really, really enjoyed Underworld 4.
Yeah.
This one was even bluer than the last one.
Yeah. Under the Underworld. I think there's one more category of these that's really trippy movies that don't advertise like that. Speed Racer that came out, the Wachowski siblings. That movie is only made for people who are on mushrooms. And it's really just bonkers crazy in terms of the visuals and what is going on in that movie. And it's Speed Racer. Hey, that Japanese anime movie that you or anime TV show that you liked growing up or that your parents liked growing up, Speed Racer. He's got a monkey. He's got a pet monkey friend.
You know how they got it made, right? It's like, well, you Hollywood people like existing properties. This is one of the oldest existing properties. We're going to adapt it into an action adventure comedy with a funny monkey. You guys like funny monkeys.
Love them.
I know you,
love
Hollywood. Them. So I feel like, yeah, they can't be too mad that it wasn't advertised as a 2-hour long drug trip, which, it definitely was.
And same thing with the movie Tree of Life. I watched that trailer this morning. The Tree of Life trailer is 95% from the Brad Pitt 50s sort of portion of that movie. And that movie has dinosaurs in it. There is not
a large portion
of that movie is about dinosaurs, and there is nary a dinosaur in the trailer.
But on the flip side, can you imagine how pissed off you would have been if they just showed you the dinosaurs in the trailer?
Oh, right. Sean Penn walking around. Oh, gosh.
Yeah, that Pixar dinosaur.
Show more dinosaurs.
That Pixar, the good dinosaur movie, actually 40 minutes of Brad Pitt beating his wife.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah,
that's really...
Yeah.
Joe Trailer.
Yeah.
Joe Trailer.
Come on. Mel Gibson, I don't know if this is like too long ago for you youngins, but when the movie Passion came out, were you guys properly storing memories at that point?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So like that movie came out and it was months of coverage of the controversy surrounding Passion because like it was too controversial for France, I think, was the big story that like France thought it was too religious and too like hardcore Christian for their delicate liberal sensibilities.
I'm with France on that one.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, the movie is horrifying, but I went and saw it pretty soon after it came out just because like it was a thing to do. Everybody was like, well, you got to see it because there's so much controversy around it. Not because like I went with my church group. I like lived in Manhattan.
No, it was the biggest.
Like went with my friends. We were like, well, we got to see like what happens in this movie that is supposedly like the most controversial movie ever. That whole controversy was sort of drummed up by Mel Gibson's production company. Basically, he pretended that France would not distribute the film. And there's like a quote from the people who ended up distributing it who were like, yes, we've been tracking the existence of this film for many years, and we're so excited to be in business with Mr. Gibson. And like,
we've been waiting for this movie for thousands of years.
Yeah, right, exactly. They were like so pumped about it, and the controversy like only existed so that Mel Gibson could satisfy his persecution complex. I think South Park completely nailed him when they had him like being like, oh no, don't nail me to the cross. Yeah. Don't like pinch my nipples. Don't like, that's, he's like,
I mean, it's
such
the
a masochist.
Passion of the Christ is the original torture porn, right?
It, am I right, man?
No, but I like,
the
I mean,
actual
before
2,000-year-old torture porn.
No, but I mean, not that. No, I just meant the movie was like, you know, years before Hostel and Saw came out. There, we had this whole torture porn boom or mini genre in the horror category.
Yeah,
and
it was so gory. I mean, it was so much.
And
it was not what I expected.
Monotonous and boring.
And it was incredibly like successful. I just pulled up the box office for this. It was the third highest grossing movie of 2004 behind Shrek 2 and Spider-Man 2.
Right.
And it beat Meet the Fockers.
Wow.
By a lot.
Oh, well, Meet the Fockers I'm okay with. Not Meet the Parents. Meet the Parents stands up. It beat The Incredibles.
I do love the
Jesus.
Idea that Mel Gibson tried to like reposition making a movie about Jesus in Western society as something like edgy and punk rock. Like, oh, no one's going to want me to do this.
No, but that's exactly right. I've talked to Jason about this, actually. You know, the idea that white Christian males are anything but the establishment majority is insane. But he was saying, like, growing up in his church, they were always talking about how like the mainstream was like these Hollywood elite weirdos who like laughed at Christians and, you know, persecuted Christians, and Christianity was just this like fringe offshoot that was like trying to hold off the godless hordes. And I remember that being a thing that like my really religious aunts and uncles were like forwarding around emails being like, go support the Passion because they're trying to stop it from coming out in theaters and stuff. Like, he really like basically staged a road show being like, the only way I can get this seen is by showing it at churches, you guys. And it's like, no, it opened on like 6,000 screens.
Yeah, it says it opened in 3,000 screens, you know, pretty high amount for a pretty you know, a big movie.
Yeah. It opened on the same number of screens as The Day After Tomorrow. So
it definitely, I mean, it got people in theaters. I remember it was like a stance. People would just go, and multiple times. People would see it so many times just to be supportive.
And cheer loudly. And cheer. We were like, yeah, whip him!
Which part? I've never seen it,
just
but would they cheer?
Full of Romans coming and watching the movie.
Right.
Yeah, I don't exactly. remember people
they cheer when he
no,
nobody,
dies. Nobody cheers,
Brett. They cheers joking. When he's, I don't know. I don't know how you Christian people do it.
You just,
come on.
You really just spent the majority of the movie, cringing. And
I remember that summer, too, was kind of pitted against Fahrenheit 9/11 as sort of a, you're going to see the liberal movie or you're going to see the conservative movie?
Speaking of other movies that used some sort of questionable news stories to get themselves out there, the Paris Hilton sex tape. And I guess the Kim Kardashian sex tape and the Pam Anderson sex tape, these all have a long history of these accidental releases of pornographic real world material of actors or actresses that accidentally get out there and make them the most famous person on the planet. And actually Marilyn Monroe, that's how she made her career. She had a movie coming out. She was just like another actress. And then there was like this controversy drummed up by this like publicity agency where they were like, these nude pictures in this calendar might be Marilyn Monroe, the actress. And she was like, they're not me. I tell you now, they're not me. And then finally she was like, all right, they're me. And she became like this famous sex symbol. And that's kind of what launched her career, was that she was the first really famous person who you could go look at naked pictures of her. And it turned out that like the publicity agency that did that was working with Marilyn Monroe, of course. And like, she was just really smart and was like doing the thing that she knew would make her a household name. And that kind of gets buried. And I think with Paris Hilton as well, that her sex tape was released the week that her reality show The Simple Life was coming out, and suddenly she's a household name. Prior to that, she was just like famous in New York.
She was like, oh, I didn't know it was being filmed, but like in the video she's setting up the camera.
Yeah, exactly.
And holding it, if I remember correctly, right. At least from the TMZ clips that I was allowed to be able to see.
Yeah, I think by the time Kim Kardashian came around, people were like, all right, we get it. You're not even doing it by accident.
We'll just skip this and make you the world's most famous person. We don't even have to have you.
But
you know,
it definitely works. Like, it's all of those people became some of the most famous people in history. And like, there's just this silly sort of pretext that you have to pretend like it's happening against your will, like the videos being like released against your will. But like, legally, I don't think that is possible. I don't think you can legally release a video and like profit off of a video that somebody is.
Yeah. Part of the Paris Hilton settlement after releasing the video is that she gets a cut of the money made from it, of the DVD sales from it. I mean, if something is leaked online, if a video of me in a precarious position is leaked on YouTube, I'm not getting any profits from it.
Sure, Brett.
Listen, I'm just trying to boost my podcast career, and I see the roadmap, and this is how you do it.
This is how it's done.
I think if it is a PR scam for these women, it still sucks that they've been like pushed into that position to have to. They couldn't just like put their show out or like rely on the movie. Like they had these producers being like, and then we're going to release a naked thing or something, you know?
Why do you have to sully the simple life with this kind of sleaze? I can't help but wonder, I think it's a distinct possibility that it was leaked intentionally, but that the sort of women involved weren't a part of it. Like, I could see like it being a PR person or, you know, a network, something like that. Like, I think with the Marilyn Monroe thing, like it said, it might have been the producer of the film that they were trying to promote at the time.
Oh, interesting.
Fritz Lang movie. So I think Paris Hilton, one of her publicists, went on a TV show and said that she thought it was helping to sell the show by doing it. So I think, I mean, I don't know, but like my instinct is to like, in a way, protect the person who is seemingly being victimized, like with Paris Hilton. If she wasn't in on it, that's like a shitty, shitty, shitty thing that this guy did. And even worse if it was people sort of close to her in her inner circle doing it for publicity. But, I mean, it could have been something that she was in on. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it's weird that she's got a cut of the revenue. But, yeah, maybe it was something that happened behind her back. So now I feel shitty.
No. Well, it came at a weird time when, like, if something were to be, like, leaked now, like, it would just go on the internet and that there wouldn't be, like, something to profit off of, really. But it was, I guess, early enough in the internet age when they wouldn't have videos that size or videos weren't being shared like that, because I think they actually made DVDs and sold them, right?
Yeah. And she gets a cut of that. And then I think there were like quite a few after that. There's like A Night in Paris and other movies that we wrote about. I don't know personally from personal experience, but I think she had a whole suite of sex tapes. And I think the ones after the first one were pretty clearly that she was aware that they were happening. But again, that doesn't mean that she wasn't a victim the first time.
But I think we can all agree that The Simple Life was great.
Yes.
Yeah.
If we have to agree on one thing.
It was hugely popular. I do remember it being hugely popular.
We've talked in the past about how PETA is sort of constantly creating controversies, and you think that they're just these like rabid, blindly passionate, you know, animal rights activists, but they're actually these weird people who are like making really calculated decisions to stir up controversy. The example Jason used was that PETA ad campaign where all the celebrities are appearing nude, and it's like specifically designed to provoke conservative people, because it's like, not only are we saying, telling you how to raise your farm animals, but we're naked celebrities. Fuck you, middle America. And it's very intentionally and like carefully designed to get a reaction. And you wonder why, like, how does PETA keep like getting in the headlines? Those people are sure are crazy. It's like, no, that's essentially their entire PR strategy, is doing controversial things in the headlines and then suing people for writing about them.
They're pretty aggressive.
And if you look into what their actual, like, their policies are, they're different than like the Humane Association. They just want animals to be treated humanely. PETA thinks having dogs and cats is akin to slavery. And they want nothing short of every home in America releasing their dog and cat into the wild to die within a few days, because they won't. Well, dogs, at least. Cats will rule the world, and we can't allow that. But
cats, the only thing that would happen if cats were released into the wild is that all birds would go extinct. Yeah, they have animal shelters. PETA has animal shelters where if you turn a stray dog in, they kill it almost immediately, because the idea is that it's better that the animal die than have to live in slavery, in bondage.
Yeah, and that's part of the extremity of their ad campaign is look, we have these crazy policies. Look at us. You have to pay attention to us.
Yeah.
They're probably not even okay with putting sunglasses and hoodies on kangaroos.
No, after you hit them with
after
your
you
car.
After you kill them, yeah.
Yeah, you should just kind of snap that thing's neck right away. Put it out of its misery rather than making it feel a touch of your
sweater.
Yeah, your terrible master hands. So just in general, ads are a thing that I know ads exaggerate. I always assumed, okay, that hamburger won't look that good when I buy it from McDonald's. That's probably not even made from the ingredients of a hamburger, the thing that they're showing me in the commercial. But I assume that they can't just completely lie. They can't say something that is not true in any
conceivable
way. Yeah,
they can't say this
way.
Hamburger will clean your window and make it a better shine.
But they can, Brett. They can. They can. Companies have sued to get the right to completely lie in commercials. And the way they're able to do it, so this happened with vitamin water. You probably realized that vitamin water has a lot of sugar in it, but you probably also assumed that they couldn't make any of the claims that they make in the commercials, like that it has like antioxidants and like that it boosts immunity, without that being like 1% true, that there's like a small way in which it like helps you, or that it has like an important vitamin.
Two vitamins in it.
Right. Right. And
mostly sugar, but there's A and B. Yeah, sure.
But I don't need my morning vitamins.
But the ads that got them taken to court claimed that vitamin water would, quote, boost your immune system and, quote, help fight free radicals. And someone was like, so we looked at this and it's actually just Kool-Aid. And Coke responded, with a defense in court that, quote, no consumer could reasonably be misled into thinking that vitamin water is a healthy beverage. That's the defense that you'll see. And this happened with Apple. They were releasing a newer model of the iPhone, and they said, twice as fast, half the price. And people were like, wow, that's pretty clear cut. You can't say that and it not be true. And they were taken to court because it wasn't true. It was only like 10% faster. And Apple used the same defense. No intelligent person could reasonably have assumed that the claim in the commercial was true. And not only is it annoying that they lie to us, but their defense is, these idiots are going to believe us? Come on, you'd have to be like so fucking stupid to believe us.
Did they win those cases, either of them?
I don't think they won, but I also think that it's pretty much irrelevant because mm-hmm. the amount of money, like every time you see a settlement in one of these cases, it's like, yes, anybody who bought this can come in for like a $20 refund.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, wow. Yeah, there's like a dozen people do that and they're like out a couple hundred bucks. Skechers had to pay $40 million, which is probably a lot of money for Skechers. That's like all the shoes they've ever sold because they had that product that claimed to tone your legs and
oh
butt.
Yeah, it was a shoe with like kind of a pebble in it. It was like a rounded right. bottom around the heel that activated your glutes and your calves right. as you walked. You didn't have to do anything, just stand up, you lazy bum.
I assumed there was like something they had done where like a trainer had like shown them a way in which that could be true, but like it was not true at all in any way. It was like 0% true.
I feel like they were counting on people to get that shoe and then just walk more.
Right.
And then yeah. they were like, and then they'll be like, oh yeah, it really worked. And it's like, no, you just walked more. Like,
right. And
the magic
like,
was in you all along.
They're like, I can feel it.
The special shoe was your heart.
Like, I can feel it working because it's just a much more uncomfortable shoe.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, my legs really hurt.
I think they invented those. I think they're called heels.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Women have been wearing them for a while. I'm not sure.
Am I right, ladies?
Oh, cheer, cheer.
Another example of this is kind of going on right now, Brett, that you had pointed out.
It's called, in the ad industry, it's called social realism. And it's when in a commercial, instead of having a beautiful actor be like, oh, this is the best thing that cleans the floor ever, you have a real person who is kind of not great at talking and doesn't look that hot, but still kind of hot. As I'll get to, I'm not just like saying everybody's hot.
Right.
The two ads that do it that bother me the most is nationally, there are the Chevrolet ads where there's a guy and he's in a big studio and he's like, I don't know if you know, but Chevy's won the most JD Power awards, or JD's ranked number one in initial safety or something like that.
Yeah,
and there's three or four people,
there's like a crowd that comes in.
Yeah,
like, I've seen these ads, like they really went hard with these ads.
And these ads, they're 30 seconds long, and basically it's 30 seconds of real looking people in a tone that doesn't seem performative, being like, oh, wow, I didn't really know that about Chevy. That's crazy.
Right. He's like, what would I tell you if Chevy hadn't just won one award, but had won five, and then like five Chevys like burst forth from the earth? And people are like, that one I was always like, well, they're clearly just amazed that you just made five Chevys like come out of the earth. They're not amazed by your car,
exactly.
Chevy.
Exactly, but when you're cutting a 30-second commercial together, all you need is 30 seconds, maybe 15 to 20 clips of people being like, whoa!
Right.
And that's it. And well, let me just describe the other commercial that I really don't like. I think it's regional only. I think it's only in Southern California, but I might be wrong. There's something in Southern California called Helpful Honda. And there are these commercials where...
Oh, I think that's nationwide. I'll look it up.
I don't know. It might be wrong. I've only seen it in terms of SoCal Honda dealers, the local Honda affiliates. But it'll be a commercial where there's one where there's a mother and a daughter buying a prom dress, and they're in a prom store. And a guy in a blue Honda shirt goes, hey, you looking for prom dresses today? Like, yeah, we're looking, but they're kind of expensive. And he goes, don't worry about it. I'm from Honda. We're buying you a prom dress. Have a happy prom. And they're like, thank you, Honda, or whatever. And that's it. And it's real people. It's shot from all sorts of weird perspectives where it seems as if it's hidden camera, or there's maybe GoPros being hidden. And I want to make it clear to the audience, people might not know this who aren't in the biz like us. Shooting anything requires a lot of people and a lot of equipment. Just for a cracked video, you know, one of the sketches we put up or one of the series we put up, to shoot something in our office or on site somewhere, there's a crew of 10 to 20 people at least. There are trucks full of equipment and giant cameras, giant freaking cameras that are in your face the whole time.
Hard not to see them.
Right. Yeah. And all you want to do as an actor is stare right into them. And that's the one thing you can't do.
That is if it looks at all reasonably good. If it looks grainy, it could be like a hidden camera or like glasses camera. But
sure. And the SoCal Honda ones go out of their way to make it seem a little grainy. But the Chevrolet ones, they have impeccable production design. And
looks
even
like
in the Honda ones,
commercial.
Too, they're cut relatively quick. And if you go through really quickly and just think, oh, is this a really nice view right angle right now? Why are there nobody else in the store right now? Why is there only one person in this prom store? It's because it's completely staged. In fact, if you go to the Honda website, it's hidden. But if you go to the SoCal Honda website, there's a form where you can fill out, hey, I need a prom dress. Put me on one of your commercials. Hey, I need a new car. I'm 16 and I live in a single parent household or whatever. And they'll come to you and reach out to you to quote unquote surprise you on national television. And I just want people to understand that commercials, especially for big national brands, are very complicated to put together. And especially for a big national brand, that means you're going to have tons of producers and ad people, all these people prying over it to make sure it's perfect. There is no way that these people are really being surprised right now. And also in the case of the Chevy ads, a website did a deep dive and found these people in other commercials. For the most part, they kind of are actors, or maybe they're not actors, or maybe they're just bad first-time actors.
Right. You mean other commercials where they're being surprised because they're real human beings, right?
No, I mean other commercials where they're like, hey, buy this soap.
I'm an actor. Bye. Yeah.
There's kind of a loophole that gets people into these commercials where if you are an aspiring actor, one of the ways where you get work at first is being in commercials, not cast on Breaking Bad immediately. But to be cast in commercials, you need to have been in a commercial. Oh, crazy. Now there's a conundrum. How do you get cast in a commercial if you haven't been in a commercial? You need to get your SAG card. You can't get your SAG card unless you've been in a commercial. SAG is the Screen Actors
which
Guild.
Which is the union that you can't get real work.
Yeah, you can't really be cast
productions if you're not a member of SAG. So yeah, it's a catch-22.
Yeah, exactly.
You have to do a commercial, or you have to do a wacky scheme to defraud one of your friends.
Yeah, basically, you have to be in a student movie that you pass off as a real movie. But so what happens for a lot of aspiring actors is they get cast in these real people ads because this is the exposure. This is the first ad that they're in that gets them the SAG card, that gets them into the union where they're allowed to act in other commercials. So you are getting a lot of actors. You are getting a lot of people who are trying to be performative, who are trying to impress the producers. And
being an actor, the thing that you learn is how to take cues on what the person who's making the thing you're in wants you to do.
Yeah. So if I'm cast in a Chevy commercial and I have to show up and I have my little name tag that says Brett on, I'm not going to be in there and be like, oh, cool. You just pulled some Chevys out of the earth, whatever. Right. Be like, oh, wow, cool.
And you were saying that you read somewhere, we couldn't find the exact source, but you read somewhere that one tactic they'll use is to say, oh, man, you guys are the second people. We're actually having to reshoot this because the last group of people just weren't enthusiastic enough. And, you know, so we weren't even able to use them in the ad. And then go.
Yeah, telling you, hey, the last people who came in, they sucked. So we really need people who are enthusiastic about Chevys. And and that's it.
Up your game.
And it's kind of a tactic people use to manipulate non-actors into being oh, wow, oh, cool. Right. I'll buy one. I'll buy three.
What?
Well, it's clearly so staged, though, because I feel so many people, if they were shocked by Chevys popping out of the earth, would probably swear a bunch. If one came up next, I'd be like, you know, and you can't have that in an ad.
There's a funny video series that's going around right now where a guy stands in front of a green screen and puts himself into the Chevy commercials, and he's acting as if a human being would act, being like, yeah, I've heard of Chevy, but I don't care for them.
Another place that you'll see actors, and I think this is just because actors tend to be people who have free time on their hands during the day, but like yes. Aaron Paul, you mentioned Breaking Bad, Aaron Paul shows up in an episode of Price is Right, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And in fact, a comedian who is like Brett's best friend from growing up.
Yeah, Josh Androsky, who was on Thursday's bonus episode. Yeah. He did that funny bit about hell in the bonus episode, if you listened to it last week. He, same thing, doesn't really have a job. He won't be too offended if he hears this. He took mushrooms and went on The Price is Right, and he's an interesting-looking guy. He's got a big beard, and, you know, with The Price is Right, I hope you, not to spoil it for the people out there, it's not random. They're not pulling a name out of a hat to get you on that stage. There's producers who go through and talk to everybody in line, and Josh is a very gregarious fellow who is wearing a hat that said Big Papa on it.
Oh, God.
And like a Dolly Parton t-shirt or something like that, or a t-shirt with like wolves on it, you know, those right. types
I got
of
more
t-shirts.
Excited about the Dolly Parton t-shirt. Yeah. That one, me
it's Dolly those, Parton those fighting wolves.
Those weren't separate thoughts. Dolly Parton and wolves on a t-shirt.
Yeah, so same thing. Yeah, he was on an episode of The Price is Right and he was on drugs, and it's evident.
Yeah. And
yeah, we'll link off to all the stuff on the footnotes of the episode.
Yeah, but I mean, again, that's just good marketing. That's making better TV by, you know, they screen these people coming in. It's not just everybody in that crowd's name is in a hat and they randomly pull it out. They screen people coming in and they're like, man, this guy really seems like he's on drugs and also might have a background in improv comedy. He's number fucking one on our list of people that we're going to pull up. And it's a crowd that is able to be at a TV studio at noon on on a Tuesday. So all you're going to get is tourists and actors or, you know, unemployed stoners or both.
Both in case of Josh, yeah.
Some things that I'm probably dumb, but I had certainly fallen for. Activia. I assumed it had some positive effect on digestion.
It didn't have one?
Didn't have
not one vitamin,
a single positive effect on digestion.
Are those the bacteria you just put in your gut and it does?
Yeah,
and
a probiotic.
Yeah, like, boy, it makes me thin or something like that.
Jamie Lee Curtis talked about her poops on TV for nothing because they're like, we have an active ingredient called Bifidus regularis.
Oh, it has regular right in there.
Yeah, science conveniently put it regular right in there. No, those are just nonsense syllables.
Yeah.
They were like, hey, J.K. Rowling, give us the name of a bacteria.
Spell. Yeah. A spell that you would cast on yogurt to make you poop.
Right, exactly. And that's what they put in the thing. So they had to pay money. They had to pay $45 million, which, again, to Dannon, ain't shit. They're always like, yeah, and then Dannon was ordered to pay $45 million to customers in a lawsuit. I never see these like news flashes where it's like,
every once in a while I get one where it's like, hey, you bought a DVD or something like that from Best Buy between the years of 1990 and 2015.
And then we found out it gives you testicular cancer.
Yeah. Like, what well, that's something that I have to say is I have to leave crack because I don't have any more time left. No, it'll be like, oh, we have to sign. You have to fill out this form. And for the $3, I'd rather not put my name into a form on the internet.
Right.
So I'm like, oh, gosh, I guess I'll work extra hard at the podcast mines this month. Get that $3 the other way.
It was like that Ticketmaster settlement. I don't know if any of you got that.
Oh,
email.
Yeah.
It
was I did. Like, yeah, that was the most recent one I got.
There's like a class action suit. It's like, okay, to settle this, you could go see like the Goo Goo Dolls or... You know,
oh, really?
Someone I'd never heard of. Ace of Base is coming to town. You know, it was always, it was just like the worst concerts
they couldn't
give tickets away to.
They also gave you some coupon codes for like $4 each, but they couldn't be used together. So you got these codes that you could add to your Ticketmaster account. And Ticketmaster, as we all know, charges 10-15% in just fees to go. So you know what? I think I had like maybe $30 or $40 in all these coupon codes from this Ticketmaster settlement, and I went to go buy a ticket to something and I got this old error. Sorry, you can only use one of these codes from the settlement. So I got like $4 off a ticket, but not enough. I wish I could put them all together to get like maybe $30 off a ticket, but no, they wouldn't let you do that. They wouldn't let you get like $3 off.
Yeah, nobody's ever gotten rich off of a settlement with Dannon, because Dannon has so many lawyers that are going to find a way to, you know, make it as difficult as possible for you to get your money, and therefore nobody's going to actually sign up for it.
And no one wants to make an enemy out of Jamie Lee Curtis either.
Right. Yeah, she does not fuck around when it comes to her poops. There's been a lot of bottled water companies that have had to admit, based on the fact that they have like mountains on their label, that no, their water is actually just filtered tap water. But there's also a campaign from soft drink companies that is called Tap the Tap, that is trying to get people to not offer tap water to customers in restaurants because it makes them less likely to drink their addictive sugar water. And so this is ongoing. It seems like something out of the 70s, but they're basically trying to train waiters and waitresses to not offer people tap water. You can, as a last resort, you can offer them bottled water from Pepsi or Coke or whatever. And they say that that's a last resort, but never, ever offer them tap water.
I remember when I worked in a restaurant, that was the thing. Like, they were like, don't offer. Like, at first it was like you could. And then suddenly there was like this shift of like, we don't offer water anymore. Like, right. they can buy it, but you can't like give them water.
Yeah.
And I was like,
they should just ask you to play dumb. Like, water? I don't
understand. I think we have that, let me check in the back.
Do you mean bottle?
This isn't the beach. Go to the beach if you want some water.
I was asked for tap water at the movie theater, and the look of disdain that those 15-year-old kids give me is palpable. They always give me the smallest cup they have with half filled with tap water.
Now, that is a policy.
Yeah. As someone who had that job when he was 15, there's like a surprising amount of pressure on you to sell sodas and popcorns and the combos. The combos is what they really want to get you.
Well, I saw the same kid I asked for the water like with a box with all of his stuff in it going home after the movie was done. He was out of there.
Oh, yeah, he got fired, you're saying?
Yeah, no, that's what I was going for. Yeah,
got it.
He got fired for giving me water. I made that up.
Pack up your bow tie and get out of here.
Pack up your bow tie and your name tag. This is The Matrix Revolutions is your favorite movie, and get the fuck out.
Duracell, just basically any consumer product, but Duracell got sued into offering their customers, I think, $3 to $12. Anyone who could prove that they bought one of their Ultra batteries, because they were like, it lasts 25% longer than normal batteries. And it didn't last any longer than normal batteries. So they can lie to you. They can just lie to you, and then they'll get sued for $3 or whatever the fuck. And yeah,
I keep a very detailed log in my house of every device that use, every remote, every digital camera, and I just keep track of the battery life. So I did get $12.
You're reaping the rewards. And just any nutritional information that I believed I knew is totally fucked. Not only can they like lie to you, because the calorie counting mechanism is like, put the food in a petri dish and burn it. See how long it burns for. But the serving sizes, which is like a thing, I think was like an early 90s stand-up joke. Like, have you seen these serving sizes? You get like 2 Cheerios per serving size. But stuff like Top Ramen, those ramen packets, those are 2 serving sizes when you look at them. Nobody in the history of poor people has ever saved half a ramen packet for later. If you're eating ramen, it's because you're really hungry and are completely out of options. But yeah, the nutritional information on the side of those assumes that people are all constantly eating half a packet of ramen and then saving the rest for later.
And it's for, on the front of the package, it says only 100 calories per serving.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So they artificially just make the serving size whatever it is. So on the front of the package, bowl of cereals, only it's got all the protein you need for the day.
Yeah. Right. But only one serving, because if you eat more than one, then you're also getting so much sodium.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. There were like these Go Lean cups of soup. I think I'm revealing how poorly I eat, where my family is just surviving off of soup and ramen. But it said certain amount of calories per cup, and it comes in a cup, like a microwavable cup is like the serving. But on the side, it's like container has 2 cups of soup in it. So it's like they were talking about
the measurement cup.
And it was 2.5 actually of what they were saying. So it was like not even remotely good for you.
Well, the other day I was eating, oh God, it was something, I think it was like a, I don't know what, it was something in a can. And in it was like every cup is like this many calories. And that's how much a serving is. But the can was the size of a cup, but it said it had like 3 servings in it. And so I was like, hold on, how many cups are in the, am I not measuring things right? What is happening? But I'm like, no, you're just saying it there. I believe the amount of servings that you say more than I believe the cup size, because I'm pretty sure there are probably more calories in there than you are saying. It's a top ramen situation is what I'm saying. It's a top ramen situation.
They top ramened you.
They top ramened me.
I wanted to mention when I think, you know, people are obviously becoming more savvy about the way they're marketed to and advertised to. And one of the ways that definitely, I don't know if I'd say it got me, but one advertising tool that I totally wasn't aware of at the time was the show Mad Men, which simultaneously made you feel smart and savvy about the ad business, but was also being paid by companies to put their products in the show.
Oh, really?
Some of them were and some of them weren't. I don't think the cigarettes were. And it's really, that's the thing. It's this odd mix of like, actually, I wrote a thing for the site recently about some of the companies that were portrayed in not great ways, like the Jaguar company has an executive that won't give them business unless he gets to sleep with Joan, which I don't think Jaguar was thrilled about. But then there are other companies like, I think London Fog was one, and there are some others that actually paid to have storylines in the show be about, you know, Don Draper getting their business. And it's especially confusing. And like, I found a quote online where the president of AMC said that they do have product integration, but then said, but you shouldn't know which ones are paid and which ones aren't, which I found kind of chilling. So
because
they
didn't
even want
money
you to know.
Us.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's interesting, the Jaguar thing, because I was just thinking, yeah, it was almost like that company was cursed because, first of all, they have like the really shitty executive who's like, hey, I'll give you my business if you sleep with me, sweetheart. And then like the guy kills himself in a Jaguar, or like tries to. And
right,
the Jaguar,
he tries to and it won't work.
Yeah, and it won't work. So I was like, man, Jaguar's really getting shit on. But it's probably because like it was the only car company that they couldn't get to give them money. So they were like, yeah, fuck you, Jaguar.
I think part of the storyline too is that it was the first car company they get and they couldn't get one of the big ones. They couldn't get Ford or they couldn't get Chevrolet. They got Jaguar, and the joke at the time about Jaguar was that Jaguars never worked,
right?
That they were poorly made cars in the 60s.
Oh my god.
Yeah, so and then there's even kind of, yeah, like they didn't have a storyline where London Fog, who gave them money, had raincoats that gave you cancer or something. So but again, like that's one where like I watched it thinking I'm deconstructing the way, you know, things are sold to me, all the while not knowing that a lot of the products in the show were being sold to me without my knowing. So yeah. Even when you think you're being clever about ads, they can still get you.
Well, yeah. And there's something, I mean, as self-critical as that show was supposed to be, I mean, there's a reason that John Hamm is the voice in every ad campaign. He's the voice of Mercedes-Benz. He's now like doing something for, I think, TurboTax or something. Or, yeah. But he's, for a while there, like right after Mad Men went off the air, if you just listened, he was the voice of everyone. Now he's like given way back to, I think, Alec Baldwin and Kiefer Sutherland. But those guys are, and Clooney, I think, get some good work there. But it is interesting that what was supposed to be a shady ad executive who's like doing all these immoral things, the advertising agency was like, yes, he's our man. Yeah, that would be really interesting to see an analysis of which brands paid. Like Coke definitely paid, right?
100%.
Coke definitely paid to be the
I read that they didn't, but who knows?
I wouldn't be surprised if they paid Coke. Hey. Can we please use your ad to end our show?
Well, that's a question I always have is, so there are all these movies that really suffer from having like fake brands in them where it's like, I'm having a diet hill. Yeah, exactly.
Diet Schlemmer.
Right.
My Schmepsy.
Or like sports shows where it's like, or sports movies where it's like fake teams like are automatically just way worse than the other ones. But then there are these shows that just are able to use the brands, but they're like obviously very critical of the thing or like make it look terrible. Do they just lie to the brands or I don't know?
Yeah. Or like the movie Castaway, I think a lot of people talked about that as like, oh, that was a weird product placement. But I think I read that they really had to convince FedEx to let them use it because, you know, it's about a FedEx plane crashing and a bunch of people's parcels ending up with a, you know, filthy Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
So all these people die,
but I want my Blu-ray player.
But that's interesting because the first 10 minutes of that movie are weirdly like a FedEx ad. He's like, every second counts. These people need to get their packages. It's like an ad for FedEx. And then, yeah, they had to put that in there so that they could then crash the fuck out of a FedEx plane.
But I don't think they paid for it. I think it was the director wanted authenticity. They didn't want to have it be like Fedco or something.
UBS. So just some random ones. Airborne is that thing that supposedly prevents you from catching a cold by bombarding your system with vitamin C. And it was developed by a teacher. So you know it's good because teachers are around sick kids all day. Like just zero actual scientific basis for the idea that that works at all. And it tastes like it should be working because it tastes like shit. But it doesn't work. Vitamin C does not give your immune system any sort of boost. Diamonds are not rare.
Oh, yeah.
I knew that diamonds were a racket because they made up the idea of wedding rings or engagement rings. But I assumed they were still hard to come by. But they're, like, not remotely rare. There are, like, city-sized diamond mines, like, all over the world. The only reason that they're able to still charge a shitload of money for them is because a company, De Beers, bought all the diamond mines and moved overseas so that U.S. monopoly law couldn't get to them. And now they're not able to sell their diamonds directly to people in America. So they just like sell it to people who then sell it to people in America. But they own all the diamonds and there are just oceans of diamonds that they're like parceling out bit by bit to maintain sort of artificial
scarcity.
They put one guy in each mine with a shovel.
Right.
Yeah.
It's the same guy that cuts the movie trailers.
Yeah, Joe. Yeah, Joe.
Joe Diamond.
Middle name Diamonds. Joe Diamond's trailer.
You might have intuited this. I had not because I'm a dumb human being, as we've covered multiple times. Those maps, the coverage maps from mobile phone commercials, don't correspond to anything. Those are totally made up. We had our editor, JF Sargent, did a video analysis of those ads where he pointed out that there was this Verizon ad where it showed like Verizon covering everything and like AT&T like covering 10% of America. But like the Verizon thing was like weirdly spotty. And then he like zoomed in and like Kentucky was just completely without service, even in like this Verizon ad. They're like, we don't fuck with you, Kentucky. You guys aren't watching TV anyway.
Those ads are misleading too, because you show, even if the AT&T map is accurate, the AT&T map is overpopulated areas of the country. The Verizon map makes you think that, oh, wow, yeah, it fills up almost like 100% of the contiguous United States. But a lot of the country has nobody in it. A lot of the country, basically from the desert in California to like Kansas, is like all desert. Yeah, there's cities. There's Las Vegas, there's Denver and stuff.
There's also people driving across that area that have to use cell service. And I've spent a lot of time not in Los Angeles and driving around the country, and there's service everywhere on AT&T and Verizon, which, you know, I've driven with people who have Verizon. It can be spotty from room to room in a building, but those maps can't reflect that. They just have a city represented by a dot, and it's like, yep, covered. But no carrier covers an entire any city 100%. It's just like there are things that get in the way of the nearest tower to you.
But that's what I want.
I know. They know you want that.
Write Joe's cell phone.
Yeah.
We'll figure it out. Joe Diamond's cell phone.
Is that a Joe Diamond cell phone trailer?
And Listerine invented the disease halitosis. So halitosis.
And cured it.
Yeah, exactly. Invented and cured. Halitosis is a made-up thing. Listerine started out as a disinfectant for surgical implements. You know how in barbershops they have that like blue stuff?
Barbicide.
The same thing.
It's basically that for surgical implements, which need to be cleaner. So it's like a more strong version of barbicide. And that's what it was. And then they were like, well, you know, this is nice to be extremely rich, but you know what would be really nice if we were like way richer? And so they were like, how can we come up with a way to sell this mostly useless product to the masses?
Should we just tell people to put a little bit in their mouth and then spit it out?
Yeah, exactly. They were like, well, let's make up this problem that people all over the world suffer from chronic bad breath. Bad breath happens because, like, if you have, like, some rotting tooth in your mouth. But assuming you don't, it's usually a fairly easily fixable thing. It's not a thing where, like, people have halitosis. It can be changed by, like, fixing your habits or, like, what you're eating or how you're cleaning your mouth. But they made it, like, if you have chronic halitosis, then you need to basically, like, firebomb the inside of your mouth with this, like, harsh chemical. And if you look at the ads from around when they figured this out, it's really funny because they're like just really kind of exploring the studio space with this like newfound discovery. They're like, yeah, this woman is like 35 and she's all alone. What a loser. Too bad she has like halitosis. And they're like really exaggerating how big a problem bad breath can be.
How much halitosis ruins your life.
Yeah, that it's...
She can't get a job.
She can't get a husband.
It's the number one social disease in America.
Well, now I feel really stupid that I bought that diamond-encrusted Listerine bottle.
Did it have flavor crystals? Because that's another bullshit thing. Flavor crystals, any gum that's like with its patented... Anytime you just see like a zoomed-in thing where like... little squares are like shooting little like anthropomorphic germs, you can generally assume that that's not 100% accurate.
You mean there's no war going on in my mouth?
Exactly. There is, but not the one you think.
But it's not halitosis, you said. It can't be halitosis.
Any final thoughts, guys?
God, we're so lied to.
I know. The world is a lie.
Don't
open your eyes, sheeple.
Don't trust anything you see on television and take your kids to see World's Greatest Dad.
Yeah, exactly. All right, that was our episode. Any final thoughts for the people before we note some feet, Brett?
Don't trust those Honda ads. They're lying to you.
Yeah, although you were right. I don't know if I said that, but you were right. It is just local Honda random acts of kindness. That's only people in Southern California, they think, are naive enough to fall for that shit.
Yeah, I have no idea what they're playing on the rest of the country. But if you come to Southern California, people, this is what they think we're all about.
Yeah, random acts of Honda-ness. I think in the rest of the country, they just show them tricking Southern Californians, and people find that endearing. Because we're the worst, man. We complain about how nice the weather is consistently.
It's only in the 60s today.
It's just like, another day of 60 to 70 degree weather. Come on. All right, on to footnotes. We are going to link off to some Cracked articles. Cracked is this website, writes a bunch of cool articles. Movies that were way darker and crazier than advertised, which is the article that kind of motivated this episode. We're going to link off to the most hilariously misleading movie trailers. We've got Drive in there, which kind of sold itself as a Fast and the Furious sequel. And if you've seen that movie, you know that it's not that. We're going to link off to Things Movie Trailers Need to Stop Doing, which is the one that I co-wrote with a gentleman named Conrad Chickadance. Awesome name. And that's the one where I found out that Kangaroo Jack was like a 48 hours, but slightly less racial slurs. We're going to link to a Cracked article called Iconic Things You Won't Believe Began as Publicity Stunts. And then we're going to venture outside of our site. We're going to link to those helpful Honda ads for the rest of the country to check out. We're going to link to those Chevy Real People ads that always have the same dude with his clipboard and cool blonde facial hair. We're going to link to the article from The News Wheel that is titled Are Chevrolet's Real People Not Actors Car Commercials Fake? Spoiler, if you've heard this episode, you know the answer to that. And then some videos. If real people commercials were real life, we're going to link to Aaron Paul on The Price is Right and Brett's good buddy and the hilarious stand-up from a recent episode of The Cracked Live Show, Josh Androsky on mushrooms on The Price is Right. It is something to behold. And that's going to do it for this week's episode. Thanks to engineer Brett, who you can follow at Brett, R-A-D-E-R, on Twitter. Thanks to JM, Carmen. We'll link off to their Twitters in the footnotes. You can follow me at Jack_O-B-R-I-E-N on Twitter. And we'll be back next week with more podcasts. Talk to you then. Still hanging around, guys? Well, good, because I'd like to just thank Coca-Cola and Powerade for sponsoring this episode of the Cracked Podcast. Without sponsors, we wouldn't have a podcast. So yeah, get ready to watch all the games this weekend by picking up a 6-pack of Coca-Cola and an 8-pack of Powerade at Walmart. And when you do pick up Coca-Cola and Powerade at Walmart, you're always ready for tip-off. Plus, get in on the NCAA March Madness action by visiting coke.com/alwaysready. NCAA and March Madness are trademarks of the National Collegiate Athletic Association, the NCAA.
Hey everybody, this is W. Kamau Bell. You may know me from such podcasts as Denzel Washington is the Greatest Actor of All Time, period. But I have another podcast with Hari Kondabolu called Politically Reactive. We're starting up our second season on March 29th, and we're joining the Earwolf family. Subscribe now on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This has been an Earwolf production, executive produced by Scott Aukerman, Chris Bannon, and Colin Anderson. For more information and content, visit earwolf.com.